All right, welcome back after the break. We are just going to take a slight detour in the sense that I had Kel come up with a very good couple of points yesterday that are worthy of having a look at, in the sense that, you know, certainly what I've seen in Australia, there are, perhaps not all of you, but some of you will be exposed to, let me phrase it another way, there are a number of astrologers around, of which I'm not one, I'm not an astrologer, but allegedly Dan was, so that's why in one respect I've moved into that aspect to try and see what Dan was trying to do. I'm not that comfortable with it really, although Kelvin is, obviously. I do know for a fact there is something in it. You've all seen that markets or stocks, a lot of them, I've showed you the three dates every month. Markets do seem to turn on those dates. It's awfully bizarre at times. But you just simply do your counts to work that out into the future. It just so happens that those counts that you use, and I found this out one of the first times I ever gave a public talk, there were two people in the audience that were jumping up and down over astrologers, because I was using the same counts as they do. 30, 60, 90, you break the circle, you divide the circle of 360 by 12, 8, 4, and 3. And it's, in fact, in one sense, it's not even astrology, it's actually the seasons, it's the turning of the seasons, so it's quite a natural thing to do. Anyway, with the way the angles are at the moment, practically every astrologer to a T is exceedingly bearish about the next couple of years. I've asked Kelvin to come along just for a couple of minutes. He will explain to you, and this is simple to follow, and it is actually, I found it quite eye-opening to have a look at, I can tell you. He'll show you briefly why that is, and then I'm going to follow on with that about how you have to be so careful. All right, so Kel, just explain that as you did to me in the office, that would be one.
Okay, to start off, we're talking about cycles, and cycles are to do with usually with two planets coming together. It's like the hour hand and the minute hand coming together, and then later on they separate and they're opposite each other, right? So if you think on those terms, we're just thinking of that. They come together, that's called a conjunction, and then they move and they separate from each other, that's called the opposition. Now, there are a couple of symbols that will be used to demonstrate that. I just want to show you the symbols. This symbol here means conjunction, where they are together.
Just describe it, Kel, so people.
It's
a circle with a.
Circle with, a lever on it.
It's a bit like a key.
Yeah. And then the other symbol is really two circles joined by a line in the middle. Now, I just want to bring that to your attention because we're going to look at that a little bit further. Now, I'll go back to the original thing. A lot of the major cycles tend to start with a conjunction where they're both together, that symbol, and then the cycle seems to grow until a point of opposition, and then it seems to decline. Now, what I've normally done in these things, I've actually examined minutely all the way around here and come to some nice conclusions which we'll cover next time. But just on the very basic thing, there is this growth period and then a declining period. And if you look at the full moon, as you imagine that this is the new moon, you've got a growth period up to the full moon and then it starts to decline. Not all cycles go in this direction, but a lot of them do. Some of them actually go in the other direction, where they start from here, grow, and then decline, or they grow from the opposition right up to the new moon or to the conjunction, and then they go the other way. So I don't want you to think that this is right for every single cycle. It's not. But it's very good for some of the big cycles. Okay, so we're moving on. Now, I want you to imagine we've got Jupiter and Saturn sitting here together. Saturn, we'll say, is the big one. And then Jupiter moves away from Saturn all the way around. And that takes 20 years to do that. Half a cycle is 10 years. A quarter of a cycle is about 5 years. These are sort of terms that we think about. We think about that this usually starts at a 0 year, another 0 year, and so we go backwards and forwards with our 10-year cycle.
Can I just point out as well, 5 years, you do that in months, 60 months. 10 years, 120 months, which ends up being the triangle shape of the triangle and the square inside the circle. Yes, so start thinking in those sort of numbers. Sorry, Kelly.
Yeah, that's okay. But very often, when the market gets, that cycle gets to here, the market can be up quite a lot. But anyway, that's detail. We're not going into the detail. We're just looking at growth and decline. Growth and decline. Okay, so this is our 20-year cycle, or 9.3 years, right, is the cycle, 20-year cycle.
Just describe that for people listening, Cal. It's the chart, it's the Jupiter-Saturn cycle, 9.8593 years. Just so
yes. Yeah. And we're overlaying that across the Dow Jones Index, because we've got 100 years of data there, and we can see reasonably what happens. Okay. So the first one, we start from this conjunction, the first one, around the turn of the century, and in a sense the market has gone up, right? The next one, it's more level. The next one along, it's definitely gone up, and then it drops down in the 30s, right? And then it moves up again, and this one is wrong, and there's a reason why it's wrong, right? That should have been a down cycle if we're just using the Jupiter and Saturn.
Which is the 1950s, thereabouts, 52 to 68, can you see that?
Yep.
52 to 56.
Yep. So what happens is there's a meshing of other cycles as well. Now I have taken the trouble of working out which cycles I think are any good and which ones aren't, and I use chi testing, I use covalent testing and so forth, and this one actually has a little bit of kick to it. Right? So we move on further, we get an up and we get a down in the opposition, we get an up here again, quite a strong one, and then the market still continues up. Do you want to read the date?
Yeah, the date there is where the three X's are again is 1990s, 92, 96.
Right, so in a sense that is out of phase, but the market continues going up, and then it's a little bit sideways. But what I'm showing here is that very often when you come across the opposition, the last part of the phase, the market tends to go sideways. So at the moment we're here at a point where we're at a possible sideways movement according to Jupiter and Saturn. This is the Dow Jones Index. Okay. Now we move on to another one, which is a Neptune Saturn cycle, and this is 35.8699. 36 years, right? It's probably a year, a timing that we've thought of before, come across in Ghana, I would imagine. But again, a similar thing, sideways movement, then an upward movement from the conjunction. Now, it's not perfect, please, it's not perfect, I know that. But definitely a sideways movement, definitely an upwards movement here, definitely a sideways. And again, a further push up, and then we're coming across to the opposition again, or the second phase, where it looks like it could go down, right? From the Saturn-Neptune cycle. The Saturn-Neptune cycle is in a downward phase. Is everyone keeping up? Okay. Now the next one is Uranus. I should point out that's a fairly strong relationship there.
Neptune-Saturn cycle, what is it? What do you call it?
Covalence.
Covariant,
yeah.
7%.
Yep. And the next one is Uranus Saturn cycle. Again, fairly strong.
Notice the number. 45. Yes?
45 years, which is another one of those.
Which, in a sense, I don't mean to keep interrupting, but I just want to.
Yep, no, go ahead, I want you to.
So, 180 months plus 90 months. Yeah? Where you've got 30 years plus 15. Again, so you're breaking down, and again, you can say if you did it on a 360, it's
You're breaking into 12ths and eighths and all that. You just, yeah.
360 plus 1/8.
Yes. In other words, yes. Good. 360 plus 1/8.
Okay. And as I said, it's not always perfect. The circles are bigger and smaller. This one's kind of sideways, sign of up. This one is very rocky, of course, during the 1929-30 difficult time. That's in the opposition period. And then we go into the conjunction phase where it moves up. And then we move into the opposition phase where it moves sideways, very remarkably. And then again, it moves up in the conjunction to the opposition. It moves up again. Very well. And then again, we're at a period of an opposition.
About
between
2010, was there about 2009,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, 2008 that kicks in, but it's a 45-year cycle. So it could be, you know, 45 years of sideways movement, according to this.
It would be half that.
Sorry?
It would be half that, 23 years.
Yeah, sorry, 23. Thank you very much. Correcting me. So we're here again at another opposition. Now, we're moving on to the last major cycle, which has got a very strong relationship, which is the Pluto-Saturn, which is 33 years, or 33.4339 years. Very strong relationship. The first one we're looking at is the opposition again, sideways movement. Then we have a strong move up. And you'll notice that it doesn't occur exactly the... Well, it's pretty close, isn't it? Right, when it starts to go down and there's a bit of difficulty there, and then we've got the up movement again from the conjunction, and then we've got sideways movement again, and then we've got a very strong upward movement again. Philip, do you want to read
yes,
that? Yes,
the up, very strong upward movement. You've got, looks like 87.
Yep. We're using the same basic chart behind, right? But we get up to a point where we get just after 1999, you know, 2000, where we're again getting the opposition where the market may tend to go sideways. It's looking sideways there, it went sideways there, it went down and sideways there, it went sideways there. So there's a very strong relationship in this particular chart. Now, you know, you can do all various tests and statistical tests, you know, it can't happen by chance. Although you might say there are only so many samples, if you count every single day, which I do, the statistics of it is phenomenal. Right, now, so each of these cycles indicate that maybe the market is going to go sideways or down. The astrological ones, and this is on the Dow Index. When I put them all in there again, we notice in the 1930s, there was a big clump of them here, right? And when I look again, there's a big clump here. So this is the reason I think a lot of astrologers around the world are thinking that the market is in trouble. I think that's all I want to say.
Can you see? Yeah, by all means. Yeah. See how that pans out, right? Can you see how you'll have astrologers pretty bearish because the cycles are all, they're clumping, in other words. And as I know on daily and weekly, when the cycles all come together like that, you get turns. All right. Now it's worthwhile, what I wanted to say about that, it's worthwhile remembering. Can we escape? We'll put. Yeah, escape. It's worthwhile. There's two things, really. Just briefly, I want to try and say about that. Where I take a differing opinion to perhaps a lot of people, perhaps everybody in a sense. It's my view. The angles of the planets and the astrological way that goes, it will drive the weather. It will drive. If you study Gans' work, you can see it clearly in floods and droughts. And when you study the commodity cycles, you can see clearly that there's points of opposition and conjunction where the floods and the droughts are due. There's absolutely no doubt about this. You can see it in his work, and Dan forecasts that. You can see how he forecasts the 1927 Mississippi flood, where he goes through and tunnels through the air. So I don't have any problems with explaining that. So it is, there is definitely something in it.
And meteorologists use it. I know I'm a meteorologist.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest correlations that they look for are the planetary lines.
Yeah, they wouldn't. They'd never come out and say it publicly.
No, they don't say it publicly.
No, but...
But they call it using astronomy.
Yes.
Rather than using astronomy.
Well, it's probably, in a way, it's probably a good idea. It's probably a good idea.
But famous Queensland long-term forecasting is...
Yeah. So, for those listening and, you know, everybody here, I just try and emphasise, you can feel, I never used to feel comfortable with it, but you can feel, you've got to get over that, because there's clearly something there, but it's my view that is the natural sequence. It's just the ebb and flow of the division of the cycles into quarters and halves of the seasons, and if you take the bigger cycles, some seasons will be beneficial, some seasons will be drought stricken, driven by the planets. What man has overlaid on that is an artificial structure of the capitalisation of the rent into a price. And then, over the years, for people to be able to afford that ever-escalating capital price, banks have found ways to create credit to allow people to lend money to buy that price. Now, I'm probably the only person in the world that explains it that way, I think. There are no others. So we have overlaid on that an artificial structure. Does that make sense? This is where the huge boom and bust comes from, not the natural phenomenon. Yes? That's what I think. But there will be portions of that natural phenomenon that will also at times make people be feeling good. So clearly when there's a drought in a nation, there's got to be less spending. So it must impact on the economy. It must impact on people's abilities to speculate. Yes? So the two are interlinked in their relation. So keep that in mind. The other thing I wanted to point out in the excellent stuff that Calvert was showing us, because it's quite clear the cycles are coming here now, and you would expect the downward move. The other thing to notice is history never repeats exactly. Never. If it repeated exactly, it would be clear to everybody, and we'd all take actions to avoid it or appropriate it, clearly. So it cannot be this easy. And two of the biggest changes that we've seen, certainly the biggest change we've seen since 1991, is the ability of the currencies to be freely floating. In the 1930s, every single banker in the world, all the owners of the banks and the Fed and the London
Bank
of England, when they all got together to work out what they were going to do about the stock market crash, basically they came together and said, we do nothing. Because it was basically decreed that the cycles were all part of nature, it was God's will, and the poor are always going to be with us. They always had to be poor. In fact, many of them would have said that we need the poor so that we can be rich. And nothing was done. In fact, one of the first things that was done in 1930 or 1931 in Australia, the Bank of England came all the way out to Australia, to Sydney, and it was a decree made by the Bank of England that Australian wages had to be cut by 30%. Immediately across the board. So everybody's wage went down. That couldn't happen today. It wouldn't be possible. Unions would never accept it. That's the first thing. The second thing was, in those days, in the 30s and before, gold couldn't be traded as such, and in fact nations strove to keep their hoard of gold. So when there was an external deficiency or an external surplus, the standard belief was that these things had to be balanced, so nations would act to stop the outflow or get the inflow of gold happening. These days, we live in an era where gold is freely traded and the banks, as such, don't store it anymore. So, again, you can't get the history repeating in the same way. So the factors that are at play, or the externalities, or where the stresses of the economy are going to show up, must be different. Yes? So now we've got freely floating exchange rates, we've got gold as its tradability, we've now also got a Fed that's quite willing to print a lot more money, so the effect of that will show in different places. So just because the planets again show that everything's bearish for the Dow Jones doesn't mean it could be different this time, you know what I mean? So in other words, you've got a scenario at the moment whereby we might have all the planets coming together in that particular format, but if you've got the Fed printing so much money, the only thing you can do when that happens is buy shares or buy gold. And you can see that influence at the moment. So this is going to be stronger on what the Dow's got to do. That's what I was trying to point out. So that's why I think you've got to be wary of what the astrologers are calling out. I think they're going to be calling it wrong for those reasons. Does that make sense to people? Yeah? Now you may choose to disagree or agree because we've got a couple of astrologers in the room. But anybody want to say anything about that?
Yeah, what happens if there's a black swan event?
Yes. It's my view that there's no such thing as this black swan event because it's all basically pretty forecastable.
Sorry?
It's pretty forecastable. So the event is timed and there's always going to be a forewarning of that event. And Nicholas Taleb came out and said that the crash of Lehman's and the global downturn that we had, he said it was a black swan event. It's just an 18-year real estate cycle. Now, the downturn has to happen different, clearly, because you've got bigger stakes at play and people are trading gold and the banks are creating ever more credit than they were before, but it's still a real estate event at its heart and it is still driven by this process. So in my view, there can't be a black swan event because underlying it is a set of principles, Ricardo's law of rent, that will determine those events. And there's nothing random about that.
The only black swan event I can think of is 9/11.
Yeah. Now, what I would say about that, which is a good point, what I'd say, which clearly, I think markets, some people in the markets knew that was coming. I put that on my website, you can see, if you go back to the time, you can see I showed you the graphs. If you haven't been there yet, you should have a look at that, it's quite interesting. The difference is, when an event like that, which is, in one sense, it's random, when it does happen, if it happens at the bottom of a real estate cycle, it affects everybody really badly because nobody's got the money in the first place. But if it happens halfway through the cycle, or if it was to happen in 2005, when everybody's already bullish anyway and there's a lot of money around, the psychological impact isn't as great. Does that make sense? That's what I think. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, well, I didn't want to spend that much time on it, but what have we got? 8:30, all right, about half an hour to go. But I just wanted to clear that up because, you know, there's been so much bad news coming out this year, really. And yet, have you noticed the markets have held higher on that bad news? The only person that ever taught me how to do that, I learned that from Gann about reading markets, which is what I tried to show you in the first section. Yes? So, I can tell you, the ability everywhere really is, of success really, is you've just got to be able to divorce your emotions from the practicality of trading. And sometimes the best decisions are the ones that are the hardest emotionally to make. Anyway, I'm sure you know that already. All right, I just wanted to mention briefly about gold. So let's get connected again. Say again.
If history is proven true,
yes,
then the current massive rally in gold should collapse like every other commodity cycle.
Absolutely, yes. You have to say that. Yes, yes. What goes up ultimately in the finish, it's going to be overdone
with commodities.
Yes, 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 yes. You would have to say that. All I'm going to say, in a sense, about gold is you have to, in my view, if you're a trader, to be a good trader, you have to find a trend. And the best trends occur when things break into all-time new highs, because they will go. Now, I think, John, you've seen that. Yes.
Half the charts I'm holding at the moment are, I put in a big red block that is on all-time highs.
Yes.
Because I just know it's going to run.
Yes, they do. They do, and Gann showed this clearly. So the aim of your portfolio, if you're on the long side, the buying side, is to fill your portfolio with stocks that are always in the all-time new highs, really. And gold, and again, again, I've said this before, I don't want to keep repeating it, but one of my weaknesses in interpreting GAN is we've had two tops 360 months apart. It's now the price is held above that. That's exceedingly bullish. And you have to look at this top. You have to look at the top in 2008, which is at $1,000. It was in March, I think, of 2008. That will now become, I've said that before, it should, very high probability, that should become a midpoint. That high will call the next high. And the next high for gold, if that's the case, will be around 1,800. And you'll see significant emotional pressure coming to gold when it gets to 1,800, which I think it will do, certainly now, as it goes. As to when? Don't know. I haven't had a look at that.
Does that chart show where it is about now?
Yes. Current price is 1282.3. Should be 20 minute delay. So that's at 5:14 a.m. September 21st. 1282.3. Yeah. And that's December contract. Which I think would be the current, probably the current contract. That's the monthly continuation. Okay, gold. So I can't say a lot about that at the moment, except if you bring it back to a daily, just measure your runs, measure your ranges, but they are the trades you've got to be looking for. I think personally on the US market, sometimes on the Australian market, you've got a sideways move at the moment. Avoid it. You won't be making money that way. It's harder to pick. You just got to get on the long side of what's going up, or the short side of what's going down. I was just going to mention coffee. Now, I didn't print out charts of this, but if you have a look, again, this is GAN's How to Make Profits Trading in Commodities. And on chapter 3, he says forecasting commodity moves, and he gives important time periods. And he says important dates to watch for trend changes, anniversary dates, seasonal changes. And he says how to divide the yearly time period. And he goes, divide the year by 2 to get half or 6 months, equals 26 weeks. Divide the year by 4 to get 3-month periods, 90 days, which is a quarter of a year, 13 weeks. And so on, divide the year by 3, divide the year by 8. But just the importance of doing that, not only do you divide the year, but you can do that from the lows as well. Can you see the start of that run there was, if I can bring that up, it's going to show it with us. So it was June 7, start of the run, June 7, which we can... Point out says June 7, we've started the run down there until the end of the run at the moment, which is there, and that is September 7, or September 10. Yep, September, what is it? Wait on. September 8. 90 days, 13 weeks. When you get those sort of runs, it helps you work out a round up through there. It's not a place to be buying coffee. So you now expect. You'd certainly expect a decline in days of 25% of 90. And you'd have a look, and what you'd be watching for now is a retracement by 50% of that move, that 90-day move, in one quarter of the time. So you've just got to watch. So again, if you're looking at trying to get back into coffee, you would be looking at trying to find a midpoint on a nice scan date. So, October 7 would be nice, somewhere around there, 30 days down, 3rd, 30, 60, 90, thereabouts.
Looks like it's touched the 50% retracement there.
Of this one, yes. Yeah. But I would have thought after a 90-day run, after 13 weeks, usually, not always, you've got to expect it. Now, again, now I've done my self-development work and it's all gone. Part of the GAN stuff now is GAN was good enough, and we've got to be able to say good enough, all right, we are looking for that midpoint. We've got to be able to say what date is, well in advance. That's what we've got to be able to do. Gann knew how to do that, and this is what we're doing moving forward. And that's what the forum is about. Yes? Good. Coffee also, if you look at Gann's book, the How to Make Profits Trading in Commodities, a lot of people will tell you the book's boring in one sense, because what Gann goes, he spends chapter after chapter giving you the highs and the lows, the dates they occurred, and you think to yourself, why would you do that? But it's important, and it's important for this reason, and this is what you've got to do for coffee. And I'll bring it back to a very local example. We're going to talk now about Collingwood Football Club. What I'm doing, though, this is what you do for coffee. And now think about the numbers that Calvert was giving us, right? So, anybody a Collingwood supporter here? No?
Juventus.
Pardon?
Juventus.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. First up, notice this, you know, once St Kilda won, the big headline, the spirit of 66. Yeah, so that's what they invoke. But you have a look at this at the moment. I mean, you can check this on Wikipedia if you want to have a look at it yourself. But you look up, I just looked up Collingwood's history of premiership and emotional appearances. Now you go back, 2003. Their last appearance in a grand final, which they lost, that was 7 years ago, right? 360 weeks. You go back, the appearance before that, 1990. That's the year they won. 20 years. You go back, the last time that they were runners-up before that was 1979 and 1980, which is 30 and 31 years ago. You go back before that, it was 1977 they were runners-up. Now that's approaching the 35 years that what Calvert was talking about before, that the Uranus cycle. They were runners-up again in 1970. I was here then, I remember that game. Remember it was against Carlton? Remember Carlton were 6-7 goals down at half-time?
44 points.
44 points, yeah, Harry Hopkins coming on and kicking 4 goals. Very dramatic. That was the start of the modern game, really. That was when Barassi said handball at all costs. Anyway, that was 1970, that was 40 years ago. You go back, for Collingwood particularly, they were runners-up in 1966 and 1964, which is 44 and 45 years ago. Splits the difference.
St Kilda.
Yeah, St Kilda in that instance was 1966 as well. Okay.
Melbourne in 64.
Yes, yes. And it was St Kilda coming up again, because it was 1971, 81, 91. Which is coming up, was almost 40. So St Kilda has some numbers as well there, but they don't have anywhere near as much emotion. You go back before 1964, prior to that, Collingwood were runners-up in 1960, which is 50 years ago. You have a look, Collingwood had a very strong side in the very early 1950s. Now that is 60, coming up, approaching 60 years. You then go back, Collingwood's probably some of their best ever sides was 1937, 1938 and 1939, 72 years. You have a look, Collingwood won 4 grand finals in a row from 1927 to 1930, 83, 84 years ago. It's also a very important cyclical planetary number. Then you have a look, they're very strong from 1917 to 1922, 90 years ago. So that's why, if you go back and listen to what I had to say in February, I said Collingwood would have a massively emotional year this year. Now, were they going to win or not, I've got no idea, but it's time for them to have very emotional year.
That's emotional.
Now, the significance of that is, that's what you apply to coffee. It's the same scenario. Now, in Gann's book, he spends a lot of time talking about the 1954 and so on cycles of coffee. It's coming up to 60 years. Therefore, you could say, in a sense, coffee's getting ready to have an emotional time. So that's what you're looking for as traders. That makes sense? Yeah. Okay. I just tried to bring it back into a modest scenario. Any questions? Okay, the last thing we'll do, I'll pull my chair over, we'll just have a look at a few stocks currently, which you could have, which you could keep in mind to have a look at, because they may prove interesting. We'll do a weekly. The first one was UGL. And you can see with UGL, this computer's doing funny things. I'm not even touching it. I don't know what's going on here. Again, UGL. The pattern that we're speaking about at the very beginning, the tops in October of 2007, down to the March lows, but again, essentially, this one lowed in 2008, so potentially should recover better. It goes back, and then it's been trending sideways pretty much at the midpoints of that extreme. It takes its time in this instance, but there's something you'd be watching for the for the break next. Yes? Yeah, it should do. So you've had 0, 1, 2, 3 or 4. Yes, it's looking... There's a good pattern there. Rising bottoms. CUE. So we spoke about that September 7. That was a lot in that previous class. But that's interesting too from the point of view of approaching past all-time highs in 2004 and 2005. So you can see the stock, it's going to take a while now. Everybody who bought back in 2004 and 2005 at those highs is now if they watch to go all the way down, they're now selling because they're now approaching their highs. So that stock will take a while to build, but again, all-time new highs, there's something you'd be watching. MSB. Again on the weekly and then the monthly charts. You can see again it's back up today, touched the all-time past top back in 2007. So those sorts of breaks there are interesting as well. They seem to have a good product, I think.
They had an announcement, Phil?
Not that I'm aware of today. I didn't follow it today.
Something going on.
There is something going on. This one, I just wanted to point out something again. So we'll have a look at SDL. For some reason, the market got excited about SDL last week and it broke out. You can see, again, on a daily basis, there's a good type of triangle pattern. I'd like to make it quite clear. Now, the way I look at markets, that break that's happened from 15 cents up to 28, I don't see that. I don't see that before it happens because it's not something that's in my particular watch list. It's not particularly on the new highs list. So I'm not worried about trying to get them. What I wanted to show you here, though, was why would the stock stop up around 30 cents just on the daily chart? Because it just looks like it's picked out any number, probably just any number. It looks like it's random. But if you go back and you pull up then, you get a wider view of the chart. Can you see how if you put in trying to work out midpoints all the time, you get this low in 2009... and you get the top of 2008, can you see how the midpoint there is at 30 cents? That's where it goes when it breaks, that's what happens. See those patterns? That's what you see. So that tells you, well, it tells me, because what happens is in the market, when the stock gets up to 26 and up through there, it's very bullish because a lot of news comes out. Because the brokers start ringing up clients and they say, look, this stock's a bit of a go. But I know from my GAN work, if that was said to me, I don't buy it up around 26 or 30 cents because the odds are against you because you're coming into a midpoint. What's more, let's see what the date was. 14th to the 9th, well, there doesn't seem to be any particular date about that, but we'll just see how the dates go. So that's SDL. That would be one you'd watch. Should be in your list now, at least, a watch list. I think UZL. Oh, come on. OZL, beg your pardon. OZL. Again, you can see how you have that pattern. The tops, October 2007, down to the lows. The stock had some difficulty at the bottoms, early 2009. And then it just comes back up. It doesn't retrace anywhere near half, so that tells you that the stock is not strong at that moment. Goes sideways a while. That's the accumulation phase you want to see. And you simply, you know, you don't have to never buy in whilst it goes sideways. Just wait for the break. Then when you see a break, that's what you can do. And again, at the beginning of September, there's a gap up, and away it goes. Now again, this is not a break into all-time new highs. So you must remember that as that stock, the higher it goes up into $1.60 and so forth, everybody who bought on the way down, they're going to be selling. And when they do sell, they'll say to themselves, I knew it was the right decision to hold. I knew that stock would come back. And that's what they rationalise to themselves. I know because I used to do it. We all did. Again, that stock, it's once that break of accumulation happens, there's good odds there that the stock will go back at least to half of the run down, which is to about $2, $2.07, which is up where that low was there, up around there. So there's the move. KRM is another one. KRM, you can see I've had my line in there from the Stex alert system. But again, that stock, it's on the right side of the ledger for me because the price is above the moving average. And on a daily basis, we've had those three tops lining up. There's a very good triangle pattern at the tops. If you weren't in already, but it was up today, but it released a bit of news today, I believe. So I was looking to buy that this morning, but it was on news. So just have to see how that behaves here from there at the moment. But at least you're on the right side. And always, every now and then, when I'm looking at the new highs, I usually try to pick a stock that perhaps I know a little bit about or something that might be of interest, or a stock that I don't, or if I don't know anything about it, I might just particularly look them up. So this is Linus Core. And I'm interested, I'm looking at that one because that stock has broken into highs, well, it's gone past its highs that were about 4 or 5 years old. It's gone past its 2007 highs, which means it's got to be significantly emotional. It's got to be enough buying power to push it past those highs. You can see it's not the all-time highs. Interesting thing about that, 1993 there, 15 years from top to top, you can see there. But I don't know much about that stock, so I thought, all right, I might have a look at it. So if we went back on the, if we went and Googled that, and if we typed in Linus Core, which you can see I've done already, and we just brought it up, you go to the website of the company, Linus, what are rare earths, or about Linus Investor Relations Media Centre, and Linus Corporation mines rare earths. And I was going to put in, see if I can find it again. I clicked on what are rare earths.
Yeah, Bill. Yeah. Rare earths is what they use for making computers and computer chips. And China has started to restrict the volume and the capacity of their production. And China is one of the major producers.
Exactly what I was going to say. Because if you click on where do they come from, it says, rare earths are not found as free metals in the Earth's crust, rather within a mixed cocktail of rare earth elements that need to be separated from the individual or combined commercial use. Despite their name, rare earths are relatively abundant in the Earth's crust, however, are often of low quality or rarely presented in economic concentration. China currently supplies approximately 95% of the global rare earths market. More than 70% of the supply of light rare earths are supplied from one mine in China. That's a stock that you've got to be interested in if the chart is cooperating. So the sort of things. That's what I think you should be doing from a point of view. If you want to learn about the stock market, if you want to improve your investment skills, go to the new highs list, pick a stock there every day, one stock, and research it. And just in three, then in, in 365 days in 1 year, you know, roughly 300 stocks. You know it quite well. And I can tell you, it's a damn good way of learning about the world. It really is. In fact, if I was the Prime Minister, if I was the head of education, I would demand that all fifth and sixth form students spend time studying companies, because this is it's the best way to learn about the world and what's produced and how is it made. Absolutely, absolutely. So all of you have got to be doing that. Now, Lynas Corporation, hold that thought for a minute. Lynas Corporation, you just go back to the chart and you can see it's having a good run. Again, when a company like that is doing well, significant demand for rare earths, significant demand for you know, Paul, what are you saying? Computers, technology, what else is it in? Cars,
mobile phones,
TVs. Yeah. What's it telling you about the world? It's telling you people are buying. You can't be bearish when that's happening, in my view.
But Phil, the other thing is too, China has put restrictions on the amount of rare earths.
Yes.
Exporting to the outside world, I believe.
Well, I would too if I was China as well.
Yes.
But it's significant though. They couldn't do that if there wasn't high demand. Yes.
There's a company, GGG, Green Land Mineral.
GGG,
yeah. The rights. There's a very large deposit of rare earths in Greenland, and GGG have the right to mine it.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it's mixed in with uranium, and Greenland has a no uranium mining policy.
in
negotiation.
But they're looking at that now.
Yes.
Yes. Well, no. Most likely. There's so much I could say about that.
Trading halt was when negotiations are underway.
Oh, okay, there, through August of this year. Okay.
Yeah, well, you can. It's big enough to break China's stranglehold on the world market.
Yeah, well, you can bet there's a CIA agent over there somewhere in the moment. Yeah, and pressure will be brought to bear. And in the long run, it's good for everybody in a sense that these things. I mean, you know, we're producing things. These things have got to be mined. If it's done sustainably, good idea. Okay, so that's how I think you can start to see if the new highs and the companies behind it helps you judge where you are in the cycle. And you've got to get to know it that way.
Well, I think another thing that supports your theory about us going up is that I've noticed looking at stocks in the last few weeks, practically anything that's remotely connected with mining is going up.
It is, yes.
Including people who build mining villages, civil engineering companies that design mining plants and all that sort of
yes.
thing. Just anyone who's remotely connected with mining,
yes.
their shares are just going that's what
yes.
up.
So, where do you buy them? Breaks of new highs. Yes, it's quite significant. At least you can say, even if you don't want to be bullish, at least you can say those companies that do that, they are going to report better earnings or significant mineralisation upgrades within the next 9 months. That's what you can say with confidence. That's about as far as you can look out, really. Well, I've finished pretty much, unless there's any questions.
Can you remind us, what period do you...
50, well, the new highs list is 52-week new highs. You can use... That's off Equities Info or in the Financial Review in the numbers pages. You can, of course, use your charting package to set your own filters. It could be 90 days... 10-day new highs, whichever you like. That's what a charter package will do for you.
You've
got an agenda item for Kiwi and the
Gantt. I've got item on agenda 4.
Number 5. Ah, yeah, good.
Is
yeah.
that why the mining stocks are going up? You know, I think you forecast in the past that the
yes.
way we'll see you next.
Gantt's 1950 forecast was public. And it is in, or it is on, pages 130, 131, and the few pages after that, of 45 Years in Wall Street. It's a good read, you should read it. If you go back on the website, you will find under the stock market section, you will find the Dow for those decades, the Dow by decade, the charts are there if you want to see it, relate his forecast to the chart, the Dow charts, and you will find that the forecast was wrong. way wrong. Gans said 1950, 51, 52, Gans said the Americans were going into a depression. Well, not depression, he didn't use it. Well, he sort of used that word. You could use it in those terms because that's sort of, it was a cyclical downturn. That's what everybody understood. You wouldn't use that term today, but you would suggest, going by those rules, it's everything again what the astrologers were doing 60 years back, downwards. Gann would have been saying the same things. What Kel showed you before, Gann would have been aware of that. Some of these things that it was indicating. Now, 60 years ago, things went up, way up. It was the start of the Korean War, and then by 1957, you had the Russians with the Sputnik and firing up their stuff. The Americans countered that by announcing their roads program and their space program and everything else. It was massively bullish. The Americans, after 1951, announced $62 billion, $1952 in, or $53 of roads and things like that. Market just took off. So it's worthwhile. I think I've said this before. Gann, bless his heart, he didn't change the book and he didn't change the forecast and he didn't take it out. He left it in there, even though it's massively wrong. But again, it's 60 years ago. 60 years ago, markets turned and they went up, even though everything else indicated that probably shouldn't happen. Worthwhile remembering that today as well. Good question. Anything else?
The K-wave. Where are we in the K-wave?
Oh, the K-wave. That's Mr. Kondratiev. From my point of view, we have the wave like this, and you've had going backwards, you're going backwards there from the bottom to the 1990s, in my view, the 1940s, the 1890s, the tops in commodity prices, 1920-21, 1970s. We've seen the bottoms, and I think we are pretty much at the early stages of what I call the fifth Kondratiev wave upwards. And it will be like the last section where we had from about 1945, 1950, thereabouts, right through till about 1975. It was about 25 years, and commodity prices just went ballistic. They rocketed up. Culminated in huge commodity prices in 1973 and 1974. I think there's every chance of that happening again. And I think this will run until about 2030. Which, if it happens nicely, would be the peak of another, 2024, 2025, 2026, the peak of another real estate cycle. Now again, I find it very difficult to forecast a recession or depression when commodity prices stay high. Because when commodity prices stay high, the commodity producers, they make zillions. What do they do with their money? They put it in a bank. What does the bank do? Lends it out. Just going in a circle. Okay.
Phil,
yes?
You look at the index of the Shanghai All Index. It looks very different to the Dow and the All.
Oh, it does. The Shanghai thing's going nowhere.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes.
China's getting bank gangbusters.
Yeah. Can't explain that one. No. To me, it indicates that China's not in a bubble. That's what it tells me. Yes, the coastal cities, some of them might have a couple of the cities, very high prices. And they're building a lot. But I think if you go out towards the back blocks, it's just like what America was in the 18th century, in 1850, 1870, when they were developing all their railroads and everything else. Huge opportunities there. So it's sort of indicating China can continue to go, in my opinion. Good. Well, anybody wants to can come out with us for a bite to eat. Greek again, I'd say. It was pretty good last time. No Chinese this time. Right about it. I don't want Indian because I live in Little India in East Ham, in London. It's very central Indian place. I love being there. It's fantastic culture. Tremendous. No complaints, but I've overdone the Indian food. That'll be good.